Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
This is Aileen Quinn from Annie, the 1982 film, and you're listening to Flopcast.
Live from Chickentown, this is the Flopcast, episode 233.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
We are rolling back, looking at the past this week, as we often do, but not as far back as we usually go.
I know, this is amazing to me. I think this is the Flopcast moment that I've been waiting for.
This will be a little different. I don't know what's going to happen, although I do know what's going to happen right now. We're going to start, as we normally do, National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day!
I hope you're hungry.
For a popsicle.
Hopefully, nobody's making popsicles out of these, because okay. I think that would be gross.
It's not a popsicle day.
October 25th is World Pasta Day.
Pasta.
Pasta of any variety.
I do not eat a lot of pasta, it suddenly occurs to me.
I feel like I eat it too much now.
Mm. So you like the real high-end fancy stuff, or SpaghettiOs?
I like the stuff coated in cheese.
Okay.
For me, pasta is a vector for cheese.
Right.
Do you have any idea how many different types of pasta there are?
I'm going to say 3.
You're close.
Yep.
To over 600.
Okay. I didn't want to go over. I was going by Price is Right rules.
You're being very conservative, and I like that about
you. Barker,
approach.
I'm going to bid 3 pastas, and hopefully everybody else went over. I'm going straight to the showcase showdown. Thank you.
Well, you've had that plan worked out all along.
I've kind of been working on this for a while.
And yeah. They never called on you.
Never. Oh. I never got to come on down.
Oh, no.
I was going to win so much pasta.
You could have. Here's the reason I know why there are so many different types of pasta.
Mm-hmm.
There was a game I started playing back when I was a teenager, and to this day I still kind of play it. And I called it the spaghetti game.
I think you've told me about this before.
Yeah. Do you know the spaghetti game?
Not. I don't play professionally, but I believe you brought this up when we were recording before.
You only think there's 3 different types of pasta, so there's no way you would keep up with the professional pasta players.
Right.
The way you start a game of spaghetti is one person says, spaghetti, and then you name different types of pasta until somebody can't name one. So this is...
I would not be good at this game.
I had friends who really got into this game, so I had to start looking up different types of pasta. Like, I had no idea what Dan Dan noodles were. So that is how I know the various forms of pasta. And of course, then there's Weird Al with the lasagna song.
Lasagna, which is his La Bamba parody.
And TV's Kyle has a song. I'm tired of pretending I don't like spaghetti. So there's so many different ways to enjoy pasta.
I enjoyed the early 80s cartoon Meatballs and Spaghetti.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I know we've spoken of on the show. It's a cartoon that everyone's forgotten all about.
And you're quite a fan of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
The Flying Spaghetti Monster is possibly the greatest pasta of all time, because some believe we are all the creation of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Pastafarians believe that.
So what kind of day are Pastafarians having on World Pasta Day?
This would be a big day in the Pastafarian community, I would assume.
Which is why I felt we needed to discuss it here.
Those who worship the Flying Spaghetti Monster, yeah.
Happy World Pasta Day.
To us all.
Ready, are you ready?
Spaghetti!
Ready, we're ready for meatball!
Spaghetti!
Ha!
All right, moving into the main theme of today's show. Well, you and I went out. We had an evening out on the town not long ago.
It was so great.
Which we haven't had a chance to discuss or review yet. Because you may have noticed at the end of the night, I just disappeared.
Yeah, you did.
You did not see me again. It was a Thursday night.
Right, we were out pretty late.
I had to get up early. I thought, this show's over. We got a train to catch, and we're gone.
You know what the funny thing was? We were all standing around waiting for you.
Yeah, I got a text from Steve saying, hey, where are you? And I said, where am I? I'm gone. We're on a train. We were riding on the train by the time the Turks came, and you were all wondering.
We were standing there like idiots.
Yeah, I don't know if you had some grandiose idea of us hanging out into the wee hours of the night.
No, I just wanted to say goodbye, because I'm your friend.
Yeah, not me. I was gone. I'm not saying goodbye to anybody. I'm going home, because it's late.
Oh, actions speak louder than words, and your actions definitely said goodbye.
But yeah, you got the message. There was quite a group of us out that night. It was you and me and the mayor and Dornell.
Dornell came out.
And our buddy Steve. But we were all seated separately inside the theater. And that's right. I managed to give you the slip when the show was over. But we saw Dar Williams.
Yeah, her anniversary tour for Mortal City.
The Mortal City album came out in 1996. And yeah, she's doing a tour this year celebrating the 20th anniversary of the record. And she plays the whole record to start off the show. I remember learning about Dar Williams back in 1996 by reading a review in the Boston Phoenix, which was the old Arts Weekly alternative newspaper in Boston. Not around anymore. Nope. This is back when I used to read about music, which I feel like no one does anymore, because why would they? Because now you a couple of clicks and you can hear whatever you want.
Right, but, you sample it.
Yeah, we used to read music reviews. But it was such a raving, crazy, positive review about how wonderful Dar Williams and this new record was. I sought it out, and I saw Dar do an in-store show at a record store in Boston. I learned months and months later at my open mic night, because that's back when I was hosting the open mic night at The Grind. Young lady came to perform at my open mic, and she started playing Dar Williams songs. So I was very excited. Here's a girl that knows Dar Williams. And this turned out to be Kim Jennings.
As you were telling the story, I'm thinking it's got to be Kim.
Of course it was Kim.
It was Kim.
And it turns out Kim was at that in-store show. We didn't know each other yet.
We
found out we were probably standing right next to each other. And then years later, Kim would join Sponge Awareness Foundation, my band. We'd bring in Kim whenever we wanted to do a sappy 80s duet.
Yes. Those were like always divine.
Endless Love or Almost Paradise, anything like, we did a bunch of those, and we'd always bring in Kim to do the duet. She was awesome, and she still is. Anyway, Mortal City, one of my favorite albums, and really one of Dar Williams' classic albums. It's a bunch of songs from that record just became mainstays of her live show to this day. She almost always does As Cool As I Am and Iowa and The Christians and the Pagans.
Speaking of those songs.
Yes.
So I discovered Dar Williams through college radio. So I did not discover her in 1996.
You were a little later.
Yes. So around 2000, when I joined the college radio station at the University of Massachusetts Lowell, I became the folk director there. And one of the songs that I discovered, this was on a compilation, was The Christians and the Pagans. Mm-hmm. I did not hear Iowa, which is now one of her mainstays as well, until I just happened to see her the very first year I went out to Falcon Ridge Folk Festival. And I didn't know the words. I thought she was saying, I would. I was like, you would what? But she was saying Iowa. But in that time when I was learning about Dar Williams little by little, I also discovered The Babysitters Here.
Yeah.
That song is my all-time favorite Dar Williams song, and I relate to it so much because in addition to having six younger siblings throughout the time that I was a teenager, I did a lot of babysitting outside of the house, and I always wanted to be the favorite babysitter.
Yeah.
I don't think I was ever as cool as the babysitter she was singing about.
Kicking around somewhere, that there's a picture of me and Dar together from 1996. I think this was backstage at the Boarding House Park in Lowell. And it's me and Dar together, and it's a funny picture because I'm like 8 feet taller than her.
Right.
Because yeah, she's tiny. And also, that's back when I had my Richard Marx hair. Yeah, it's a great picture. I'm not that petty. As cool as I am, I thought you'd know this already. I will not be afraid of women. I will not be afraid of women. Anyway, Starr is off celebrating the Mortal City album from 20 years ago, 1996, and it got me thinking about the music of 1996, which is weird because you think, wait a minute, don't I always just think about music of the 80s?
I know, I can't believe.
How dare you think of the mid-90s? Who cares? It was all over by then.
About something other than the 80s.
Yeah.
And indeed, the mid-90s had a very interesting landscape in terms of tunes.
I realized that I quite fondly recall the music of the mid-90s. And yeah, well put, it was a weird landscape.
And it was delightfully weird.
Oh yeah, there was some good stuff going on. As we've discussed recently, this was post-grunge, post-Nirvana, and alternative music had become way more mainstream. So a lot more interesting bands were breaking through. You had your mainstream pop stuff happening that was off my radar.
Oh, like that I Love You Always Forever song.
I remember that one.
That ended up being, I believe, Billboard calculated the number one song of the entire decade.
Like of the decade?
That was the number one.
I found a list of the top 100 songs of 1996, and I trimmed it down to just the songs that I recognized, which knocked it down to about 30. But yeah, I remember that song, and that was Donna Lewis.
Yes.
And I could not have told you that earlier today. I do not remember her name, but I remember that song. That wasn't bad.
That wasn't good.
Catchy little song, though. I could deal with that.
A little too repetitive.
I'm thinking more Celine Dion.
Oh.
Was inescapable. Even in 96. This is pre-Titanic, mind you.
Oh, my.
It only got worse the following year.
You make an excellent point. But there was some pop that was quite good at that time. Some, some hip-hop. 1996.
You had me and then you lost me.
Oh. What? Come on. The Fugees.
Okay. I remember that name.
The Fugees.
I don't know what they did.
They covered Killing Me Softly.
And, I remember that.
And
yeah.
And No Woman, No Cry.
Oh, no. This is what I get for suggesting we talk about the music. Did you immediately, when I suggested this topic, what would make me angriest when you went and researched this? Could I somehow find a rap, reggae, hybrid song to weave into this conversation and just see if Kevin's head will explode?
I liked it. I'm sorry. But it wasn't the thing I liked best in the 90s,
oh,
if that makes you feel better.
A little.
But there were songs that were inescapable that I didn't completely hate. Can we start talking about the really cool bands from the 90s?
Yeah, please. That's what we're here for.
In 1996, an album called Born on a Pirate Ship broke. And I came to learn of the Bare Naked Ladies with The Old Apartment. That was on Born on a Pirate Ship. I had a Walkman, and that was the tape that was always in there.
Even a lot of those kind of just vaguely alternative, but drifting into mainstream sort of alt-pop rock stuff.
Yeah.
I liked it, that, like, Gin Blossoms.
Yeah.
You know, fun, catchy stuff. Follow You Down and all that.
Nothing brings you back to the 90s quite like the Gin Blossoms. Except for maybe Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Remember Dishwalla Counting Blue Cars?
Yes, and I kept wondering when they were going to come out with other songs.
There were a lot of bands back then that there was no other song, I'm afraid. Breakfast at Tiffany's, right? Deep Blue Something.
Yes.
There were so many of these little sort of alternative rock bands were just kicking around back then. And they'd have one or two songs, and they were good, fun little songs. And then we swept them away. Like, okay, thank you. Who's next? And the answer to who's next was like Space Hog.
That's true.
Who I like them too.
But meanwhile, in 1996, there was also the Cardigans with Love Fool.
Yes, I remember that.
A song that I do at karaoke to this day.
Really?
Yes. I loved that song.
I'm also, I don't think we've talked about this much, but I love Joan Osborne.
Right.
And Joan's big breakthrough record, the Relish album, came out in 95. But it was a slow burn until it really broke in 96. And you know, One of Us was the big hit, of course. And I don't think people know how good Joan Osborne is. Because most people know the one song, which was a great song. It was a beautiful song. We all got sick of it.
But she's not Dishwalla.
She's not Dishwalla.
She's not Deep Blue Something. She has other music.
Joan's been putting out a lot of music for the last 20 plus years now. Super cool stuff.
There is a band, a local band, Boston band. I hope this is not weird because...
It sounds like it's going to be.
I think it's
going to
be weird because what got us talking about 1996 was Dar Williams.
Yeah.
And an act from Boston that put out two albums in 1996 was Jim's Big Ego.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It sounds like things between Dar and Jim Infantino are not awkward anymore.
Mm. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they were actually
an they item. Were an item.
They were an item at one point. Sure.
And she mentioned at the end of her show that he designed the T-shirt for this anniversary tour. So all's well that ends well.
I think so.
I kind of wonder, I lived a very sheltered life in the mid-90s, and I kind of wondered what it would have been like if I could have had exposure to the coffee house scene in the 90s in Boston.
Yeah.
It seems like it would have been amazing if we had the story with Jonathan Brook.
Because surprisingly, for people who only know me these days from the Flopcast and think, you know, I'm just into Air Supply and Freeze Pop. And that's it. And in a way, you're right. But I was in the middle of that folk scene back then. I was hosting an open mic night, which we mostly had folk acoustic type performers. I was hanging around Club Passim all the time in Boston in 96.
You know who else I discovered in the mid-90s? They Might Be Giants.
You just discovered them in 96. Wow.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Flood had come around a few years earlier.
Flood was 1990.
And all I ever heard was Flood. So it took until 2004 for me to realize that they had other songs.
They put out a record in 96. That was the year, I think, that Factory Showroom came out.
Right.
It isn't one of their better known albums, but like that had James K. Polk on it, and that had New York City on it. So a couple of songs that were really very popular live songs of theirs ever since.
But New Hampshire wasn't like Boston, where there were venues all over for bands like these to perform. And I wasn't allowed to go very far because I was a teenager.
Sure.
I was elated when I was allowed to go to the Iron Horse to see the Bare Naked Ladies before they got so popular. That
That's a small room to see.
I was three or four rows in. Sure. I was in my glory, even when some guy dumped beer on my head. I snuck in. It's the only show I ever snuck into underage. Don't judge.
And then along came Hootie and the Blowfish.
Ugh, okay. Fugees to you is like Hootie and the Blowfish to me.
I'm not going to defend Hootie and the Blowfish.
Thank you.
I was hitting all the clubs in the mid-90s, so I was seeing a lot of these wacky little... I never saw Hootie, but I was
going... Oh, you missed out.
I'm sure I did. So like, I saw Better Than Ezra back then.
Remember? No, did not. Get out of here.
I went to a Better Than Ezra concert.
Okay, I'm a little bit jealous
If there's any question that it was not the mid-90s, you look up and you're watching Better Than Ezra. I went to a No Doubt concert in 1996.
You told me about this.
Yeah, with the opening band was Goldfinger.
Wow.
Which was like a ska kind of pop band that had one hit. So that was a serious 1996 concert. That was no fooling around. This is 1996.
Was Garbage out in 1996?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stupid Girl, right?
Only Happy When It Rains.
Yes. That was like Natalie Merchant's big year, I think. That was post 10,000 Maniacs.
Carnival.
I think I saw her at Great Woods that year. Yeah, the ladies were really coming on strong in the mid-90s, in addition to like Joan Osborne and No Doubt Natalie Merchant, and who else was...
Alanis Morissette.
Alanis Morissette. That was her big year, too. I think the Jagged Little Pill album came out in 95, I think. But it just was steamrolling through 96.
Yes.
As well. And again, as someone hosting an open mic night, all the high school girls, they just wanted to sing Alanis Morissette songs at my open mic night.
Alanis Morissette and Lisa Loeb, right?
Yes, a lot of Lisa Loeb.
Everybody wanted to sing Stay.
And I liked Alanis Morissette.
Me too. Even when I got sick of hearing her songs.
Yes. I'm going to lightning round through some of the songs that I have on this wacky list in front of me. And let me just get your impression on some of these, because there's so much just goofy stuff around back then. Jewel and Who Will Save Your Soul, remember?
Yes, and the Jewel songs were the ones that I was performing at the open mic.
Okay, yeah, Jewel was huge at my open mic night as well.
Foolish Games.
Yeah, there were girls that would sing Jewel songs every week also at my show. I saw Jewel do like an in-store show in Boston at that time as well when her record came out. I never really got into Jewel.
I had her album.
Yeah.
I listened to it top to bottom many times over.
Blues Traveler, they were getting big, 95, 96, and I liked them.
Me too. But anyway.
Every conversation about Blues Traveler, that's how you end it. That's how you get out. Remember Della Mitri, Roll to Me?
Yes, and Tell Her This.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
I liked Tell Her This better than Roll to Me.
How about the refreshments and Bandidos?
Yes.
Remember?
I do.
That was good. That was fun and wacky.
I didn't know the band was the Refreshments. That was I'm like, the refreshments. Where do I find this song?
And the Refreshments, like the following year, I think you'd know them from the theme song to King of the Hill.
Yes.
The instrumental, same band. But yeah, Bandidos was crazy. They're singing about Jean-Luc Picard. I like that. Oh, Nerf Herder, we mentioned on the show, because they were at Dragon Con this year.
Mm-hmm.
96 was the year that Nerf Herder had their hit Van Halen.
I know you're lightning rounding, but isn't 1996 the year Beck's Odelay album came out?
Perhaps. Yeah. I was never a Beck fan.
Oh, I was, and I still am.
But yeah, he was certainly around. Weird Al put out an album in 96. That was the Bad Hair Day album.
Thank God Weird Al put out an album in 96.
Yeah, the album was called Bad Hair Day, and he had the crazy hair and the Coolio hair.
Yes.
On the cover, because that was the album that included Amish Paradise, his yes. Coolio parody.
Because, man, I think you know this, I went to a private school, and I totally felt like a misfit.
Yep.
But when that album popped up, and people started appreciating, and it was like, see, funny is cool.
How about Mother Mother by Tracy Bonham?
Believe it or not, that's a song that I've also performed at coffee houses.
Really? Yes. You blow out the mics and the sound system?
Oh, hell yes.
I hope everybody remembers Mother Mother by Tracy Bonham. That's where she just screams.
Everything's fine!
She just loses it and freaks out and screams that everything's fine.
How could you forget?
Yeah, she was cool. That was a Boston-based performer also, I believe. She was local, wasn't she?
I did not know that.
I think she was.
Could be. So I remember that the Wallflowers were starting to get big in the mid-90s with One Headlight.
Yeah, Wallflowers' Sixth Avenue Heartache came out in 96, and then One Headlight the following year
right.
in 97.
Right, and One Headlight was the song that really blew up, but I liked Sixth Avenue.
That's Dylan's kid.
And I didn't know it.
oh, really?
I did not know that till many years later, and hey, good job for getting out from underneath your father's shadow. He definitely had his own sound.
I was watching Jacob Dylan, it might have been with the Wallflowers, performing on some talk show a couple years ago. And especially now that he's a bit older now, it's eerie how much he looks like Bob. I think Bob Dylan might be his mother, too. This kid has got to have just 100% Bob Dylan DNA, because that's scary how much he looked like Dylan.
Was 1996 the year that Wonderwall by Oasis came out?
Yes, that was a big hit in 96, yeah.
That sounded unlike anything else I was hearing on the radio at the time.
I was never a big Oasis guy, but I know everybody else loved them.
I loved Wonderwall, sure. But then I listened for new music to come out by Oasis, and I didn't like anything after that.
I think we wanted to make sure we talked some primitive radio gods, right?
Yes, let's. Oh my goodness.
I like that song.
That encapsulates the mid-90s like nothing else. Standing outside a broken telephone booth with money in my hand.
What a title for a song, and what a weird song, and what a weird story of that song. This was like a guy that was just kind of messing around with bands as a side project years and years earlier. That song was just something that was just on an old tape that he found. Like, oh yeah, here's that stuff I recorded years ago. And just on a whim, he's sent it out to record labels.
Wow.
Crazy. So he kind of made up the band name Primitive Radio Gods, but it was just one guy with a box of tapes in his garage.
That is so excellent. There's a lyric from that song. The plane takes off from Baltimore and touches down on, I think he says, Bourbon Street.
Yeah, I think so.
However, I couldn't tell what he was saying at the time. Fun cornflake fact. Back in the day, I lived on a street called Bremer Street, so I always changed it to the plane takes off from Baltimore and touches down on Bremer Street.
You were just watching for the primitive radio guys to land right outside your house.
It never happened, but I always hoped.
But then the hook of that song, as Blues Traveler would say, the hook was the B.B. King line.
Yes.
He had a sample of B.B. King, and it really worked. I liked
so beautifully.
I liked the way you put that song together. Primitive radio gods, and of course, we never heard from that guy ever again.
He reincarnated as Lady Gaga.
That must be, it's the only explanation that makes any sense. I think you're correct.
Primitive Radio Gaga.
As we wind down our look back at the frightening world of 20 years ago in 96, do you realize what the number one song, according to this list that I found, the number one song of 1996 is one that we have not mentioned yet?
thinking.
And we probably shouldn't mention it at all, but I think we're going to. We have to. We have to.
Do we? Because I think I just realized what it is.
Well, I don't even want to say it. You say it. Number one.
I think it must have been Los Del Rio, right?
Oh, yeah. That's the band name.
Oh, gosh. In that case, it was Macarena.
You are correct. Yeah, remember that? That was 96.
It was when the Macarena overtook the electric slide at weddings, and it got super creepy.
I went to a wedding in the fall of 96, peak Macarena season, because that my my friend Matt and Jane, they got married in fall of 96, and I remember this happening at their wedding. You should have seen, needless to say, I was in the middle of the dance floor leading the whole group, going through all the dance steps. You know me at a wedding. You know that I will dance like no one else.
Oh my goodness. I remember it. I just did it. Okay, you can't hear me dancing on the podcast, but I totally just did it. How do you cleanse your musical palate?
Remember
of the
video?
Yes.
The music video when you saw these guys? Remember those guys?
Yes, I do remember those guys.
They did not look like they should have the number one song of the year.
But they did.
They did. And they knew it. They were kind of smiling and were like, yeah, look at us. We're 58 years old and we're on MTV. Deal with it, people. That kind of sums up how crazy it was in music in 96. That was number one.
It was a weird time to be 17.
Dar Williams was the only one keeping me sane that year, I think.
Mm.
And she still is, 20 years later.
Good stuff. Still holds up. I mean, I can still hear the primitive radio gods. And
oh, yeah, that never went out of my head.
Right.
Yeah.
I heard it a ton of times, but I never got sick of it.
We could go on and on. Maybe we'll try this again sometime. Pick some other year.
From the 90s?
Wow, let's not get too crazy. But who knows?
But I'm Cornflake. It's my job to get crazy.
Right. For now, though, as we wind down, you know what? Let's hit that ESO Amazon store again.
Oh, yeah.
I'll bet we've brought back a lot of memories from the mid-90s, and maybe you want to hear some of this music again, and maybe you want to buy yourself a good old-fashioned 1990s CD. We didn't listen to MP3s in 1996, did we?
You put in a CD and you listen to all the songs by the artist.
We listen to CDs and, you know,
the way Mother Nature intended.
If you go on Amazon.com, you can still buy CDs of a lot of this stuff, I'll bet.
Yes.
And you can probably get MP3s as well, if that's your preference these days, you crazy high-tech kids living in the modern world. But if you're going to go to Amazon, don't just go straight to Amazon. Go to ESOpodcast.com. They've got a link to Amazon right at the top of that page. You click on that link, you go to Amazon, you buy all your Primitive Radio God CDs when you get there, and then our network gets a little cut of whatever you spend at Amazon.
That is so great.
You could stock up on Deep Blue Something CDs.
Or just get yourself a Deep Blue Something.
Just get one while you're there. Dishwalla.
Buy one Deep Blue Something, get the second one at half the cost.
The complete works of Delamitri could very well be available on Amazon.com.
Not a bad CD.
That's okay.
It's good stuff.
Dog's Eye View, Everything Falls Apart.
That song was such a downer.
You might be able to get that on Amazon. So ESOpodcast.com, click on the Amazon link. Thank you. Why don't you get us out of here, Cornflake, and we'll try to crawl back into the present day.
Okay. I was hoping we'd be like Moxie Fruvis and be stuck in the 90s. But I guess if we're going to come back to present day, find us on the internet, won't you? Flopcast.net is our website. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/flopcast. And talk about being modern. We have a Twitter handle. It's at Flopcast.
We did not have a Twitter handle in 1996. Hardly anybody did.
And to this day, we don't exactly have a handle on Twitter. But we do have a Twitter handle.
I use Twitter about as much as I did in 96 today. That is true.
Well, despite all our rage, we're just a podcast in a cage. We'll be back next week.
Okay.
Peace and cookies.
Hello, Marvel Universe! The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.